You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome to the Political Cesspool radio program this Saturday evening, February the 22nd. I'm your host, James Edwards. Keith Alexander back in the studio tonight. Keith, we missed you on Ladies' Night, but you know what they say, you can only have one rooster in the hen house.
And that's you, right? Okay, well, I listened to a lot of it. It was really good. Tell Courtney I got the picture she sent me at Christmas time of her children. They're beautiful. All of our ladies, you know, Lacey, Kim,
Lana,
Janice. Yeah, right, Lana, Janice, everybody, I mean, did a great job. I listened to the whole thing last week, and it really went well.
I thought that it did as well, Keith. I enjoyed having those ladies on. It was a fun show. It was a special event type of a show, but a lot of good content, and it was appropriate for Valentine's Day. You know, we got some special events coming up as well. Next month, during the month of March, we're going to have TPC's World Tour, where we interview a different leader and activist from a different European nation each week. So we're going to be popping around to different nations throughout the Western world and hearing from people who live there how it's going in their respective nations. Confederate History Month, of course, coming up in April. So a lot of good, unique content and programming coming up here on TPC as we move forward into the springtime. Now, Keith, one of the ladies that was on the show last week asked me to ask you if you knew that Tennessee Ernie Ford had an album entitled Civil War Songs of the South.
Well, I had heard about it, but I don't have it, and I haven't heard all the songs on it. I know that he did a version of the Ballad of Davy Crockett that I hear on one of the oldie stations here in Memphis, at least weekly. And he was kind of like the resident Southerner on all the early TV shows, like he was always appearing on I Love Lucy or Jackie Gleason's show and things like this, and he was supposed to be this cornpone guy, but he's really pretty polished. Another thing that he did was he sang a lot of gospel songs, had a lot of gospel albums as well, which are also played on Sunday morning by one of the oldie stations here in town. So, yeah, Tennessee Ernie Ford was great.
Well, you know, he had to be great if he could come up with an album of our songs from the War Between the States. We know Dixie, we know Bonnie Blue Flag. That's two.
Well, you know, it was a different world back then. You saw a picture of me when I was a little boy. I showed you this week.
I actually sent that to Kim, who was the one who asked me about that last week.
And, you know, we're just steeped in Confederate lore. And
we're going to, I tell you, we're like going to have to find that up. Album. We're going to have to find that album and showcase it during Confederate History Month. But I got one more thing for you. Also from Kim, her son was reading a book, and it was a book that told tale of an Arkansas traveler. So here's what it says. Here's what it reads. Then, like many other young men, he slipped from his home moorings and began to drink while he was in the service. Stationed in Germany in the early 1950s, he joined a country band of fellow soldiers. We were pretty, he admits, but I don't think I ever enjoyed picking and singing so much. As a young married man, he got a job selling appliances in Memphis. He spent more time listening to the radio than he did knocking on doors. Without any professional experience, he got a job in Mississippi. The station manager sent him back to Memphis to attend broadcasting school. There, he became friends with two music-loving mechanics, Marshall Grant and Luther Perkins. Their first request to sing was from a Pentecostal church just north of Memphis. "What are we going to wear?" Luther asked. After he thought about it for a minute, the man replied, "Why don't we just wear black? Because black's best for church." And it was black ever since for Johnny Cash.
Yep. He came from Dyess, Arkansas, the son of a sharecropper.
Well, the reason I bring that up, I guess it is interesting history, as we like to have a little banter in our opening segments each week. But we actually, Keith, one of your favorite restaurants in the entire world is a restaurant at which they filmed a scene in the movie that starred Joaquin Phoenix, who just won the Academy Award for his portrayal as the Joker in the movie Joker, and also Reese Witherspoon. It was called Walk the Line, and it was the biography of Johnny and June Cash. And they filmed a scene at this restaurant that's one of your favorites, and we go there pretty often. Tell them about it.
Well, furthermore, that restaurant, I Walk the Line, was a famous Johnny Cash single. He had an album. I have a copy of the original album that I gave to the owners of Bozo's Barbecue, which is the place you're talking about in Mason, Tennessee, and they have it up in their restaurant. So, Johnny Cash was great. He was a, there are people that don't like his voice, but I'm not one of them. I think he has a great voice, and I thought that he had a lot of good music. June Carter Cash, they're authentic people. I think they were not, they didn't let the big time go to their head.
Well, and when you go to that restaurant, you can find pictures that were taken during the shooting of the movie there in the restaurant. But the restaurant itself is steeped in history. Tell them that very quickly, Keith.
Well, founded in 1923, it was called Bozo's. And then a Jewish guy named Larry Harmon, who in the late 30s, early 40s became Bozo the Clown, brought a lawsuit trying to stop them from using the name Bozo's. And they said, we had the name Bozo before you did. And then he tried to pacify them, say, well, you just have to agree not to expand your restaurants into a chain. And they said, well, we have the right to do that, so we're not going to do it. They took the case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court at their own expense. I think it probably broke them financially, but these were people of principle, and they were not just around by Jewish power and influence. A great little aside, that restaurant is like going back in time.
It looks like you're going into a 1920s style diner when you go in there, and it's out in the middle of nowhere still to this day. I don't know how they could have had business back there in 1923, because there's not 100 people that live in the town it's in 2020.
Well, people in that neck of the woods really like it. It's in Tipton County. It's like in the southeast corner of Tipton County. It's a great restaurant, good food, very friendly people running it. If you ever find yourself going down U.S. Highway 70 outside of Memphis, look for it and stop in there if you can. They have wonderful homemade pies with meringue probably 3 or 4 inches high on it.
Well, my wife loves Bozo's barbecue sauce. She'll eat it on anything. And by the way, that was another little announcement we made last week, is that my wife and Keith, we were having dinner with her before we came to the studio tonight, is expecting number 3. If in case you missed it last week, we have reached replacement level fertility, or soon will, at the Edwards household.
Well, I had 3, and I can tell you that I now wish I'd had 4 or 5, so keep after it.
So better than 2.1.
Absolutely, yeah. You've got to do that. In fact, we have a lady that's going to be on later in the show, aren't we?
I'm glad you prompted me, because we do have to get down to business tonight. What's coming up on tonight's show? We had the Great Ladies Night show last week. If you missed it, go back and listen to those wonderful women. Tonight, we are going to have more ladies. Janice is actually going to be back on tonight in the last 30 minutes of the show, but Virginia Abernathy will be on before she, at the top of the third hour. Virginia Abernathy, our good friend, Dr. Abernathy, just wrote an article that was published by the Washington Examiner, and it documents her findings that there may be, or we may be, on the cusp of a new baby boom. That's coming up. And, she was prophetic in my home anyway. Jason Bartlett making his debut appearance on TPC. This is a young man who is walking across America to raise awareness about the farm murders in South Africa. This young man is walking from Texas to the White House, and he's halfway between his trek
now. He passed through Bartlett, his namesake community.
That's right. He sure did. Earlier, he did, about last week. All that and more coming tonight. Stay tuned. We got a lot of news this first hour, though.
Being there with your child and being there for your child are two completely different things. One denotes a simple presence, which is a start, but can also be accomplished by someone other than you.
Hey, can you help me with this algebra problem?
See, that sheep did a fine job of being there with the child, but it didn't do a very good job of being there for the child. Now listen to the difference an involved parent can make.
Hey, can you help me with this algebra problem?
I'm not very good at algebra, but do you have any English questions? Because I done real good in English.
Oh, Mom.
Okay, let's take a look.
Okay, so the algebra problem didn't get solved, but something better happened. Mom was there for her child. And when you're really there, they'll know how much you care. from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. As a teenager, I gave my first public speech in my church. My hand shook, my heart pounded. I thought to myself, I can't do this, but somehow I did, and because I wanted to talk about things that were important, I persisted. I chided my church as a senior in high school for not seeming to care about the not yet born, for looking the other way, and for not taking a stand on life.
I will be in earnest. I will not equivocate, and I will not excuse. I will not retreat an inch, and I will be heard.
One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, we've got so much news to cover this hour before we get to our featured guest, Jason Bartlett, walking across America to raise awareness about the farm murders in South Africa. You know, we have a regular rotation of guests, of which Virginia Aronethy, who'll be with us in the third hour, is part. But it's always nice to debut new names and personalities on the program. Jason Bartlett, what a story that's going to be. But first, let's get down. Well, let's just start here, Keith. We posted, reposted, I should say, an article written by Brad Griffin this week. We titled it Power Politics. Break it down in 2 minutes, and there's a reason I'm asking you to do that.
Well, basically saying that the Overton window has shifted. And he's absolutely right, and it has affected both conservatives and liberals. For example, back in the 1920s, it was very socially acceptable to be a member of the Ku Klux Klan. Then, during the Civil Rights Movement, the Overton window shifted, and it made you an outlaw to be a member of that. See? Well, this is still happening today. For example, people that hold views like William F. Buckley did in the 1950s. He was anti-integration, racial integration, for example. And the National Review had all sorts of people that were stalwarts in the Southern resistance to the Brown decision and things like that were featured in the pages of the National Review. Now, anyone who does that, what Brad is pointing out, this window has shifted, you're an outlaw if you do that. On the other hand, on the left, it's shifted in their direction. Back in the 50s or 60s, if you started talking about gay marriage or transsexual rights and things like this, people would think that you needed to be under lock and key. But now we see with the Democratic candidates for president that basically you've got to be out there, I mean, right to the brink on all these leftist issues, or you're not considered timber to be a Democratic candidate for president.
Well, and another thing, another issue he raises in that article that we posted at thepoliticalcesspool.org, go back and check it out for yourself, Power Politics, is that how do you take your voting might and wield it into political power? And that brings us to a poll that was recently publicized by Politico, which is by no means a conservative organ or entity. And Politico reported that the results of a poll that they had commissioned, 11% of the respondents told them that it was more important to them that they were white than American. So in other words, 11% of the people polled by Politico said being white was more important to them than being an American. I would agree with that. If you asked me, I would say yes, absolutely. Now, that's 11%. That was just the 11% that were being honest with the pollster. But if you take that and you extrapolate it throughout the entire population, that's 29.7 million people who are at least racially conscious. That's numbers you can win with, Keith. That's numbers you can make a big dent with. But another thing that the article pointed out were that those people, those 11%, were completely invisible in local politics. And the reason for that being, of course, is that both parties have shut them out, and they know there's a big price to pay for mentioning that publicly, so they silence themselves. But you've got 11% of the population, at least, that's 30 million people almost, who are basically, as I say, fundamentally agreeing with the tenets of this broadcast.
Well, they used to have a story about a man without a country. Well, these are people, American citizens, without a political party. And these people don't have any representation, and we put up with it, unfortunately, because we're white people. White people do that. White people allow their leaders to throw them under the bus, sell them out, to, like, for example, Bill Lee, the governor of Tennessee, who was a member of Kappa Alpha fraternity at Auburn University back when he was in college, dressed up in a Confederate uniform for the Old South Week that they always have at Kappa Alpha back in the day. And they had the girls in crinoline dresses and the boys in Confederate officer uniforms at their big annual ball. So that type of stuff, you know, we have people like Bill Lee who will denounce anybody, for example, that it wants to maintain the Confederate statues and monuments that are in there. So, you know, black people don't tolerate race traitors among their politicians. If a black politician is felt to have sold out the interests of black people, he will be booted out by them in the next election. Our people say, well, you know, he's the lesser of two evils. We've got to go with this. Well, that type of thinking is what allows the left to move the Overton window ever further to the left. And, you know, it's going to be interesting, for example, if Pete Buttigieg gets the nomination, which I think is very unlikely, but if he did, then the Democratic Party could learn firsthand that they have well outflanked their own base when it comes to the issues. Hispanics, Muslims, and blacks are not going to vote for an openly gay guy for president. And, I mean, they're going to have a whipping that makes, what was it, Michael Dukakis and George McGovern's 49-1 wipeouts look like a Sunday regatta.
Well, they may do it anyway if they go with Sanders or Booty Man. But my wife and I and our children, we went out for a little drive out in the country today. And we were driving out into some rural counties, and there was an all-white school that had the Black History Month. We're celebrating Black History Month. So you see all this pandering, you know, and it goes to the LGBTQ, RSLTNE community, too, all this pandering. But here you have a very sizable chunk of the population that they will not allow to be organized. I mean, certainly we serve as a voice for that dispossessed majority, that dissident right, and we have for the last 16 years. But that is a sizable portion of the voting public that is completely not just underserved, but is not served at all. They just say, well, we know we can farm them out and take them. They're going to be Republican voters, so why do we need to give them anything? They're going to give us their vote anyway. And they've been right about that.
Well, you know, it was Spiro Agnew that said that we were the silent majority. Richard Nixon ran on that plank, and he got elected to be president. Now, I don't know if people like us are the silent majority anymore, but we are at least the silent minority of significant minority, 29%, almost 30, I mean, what was it?
11%? It was 11%, according to this political poll. Now, you know, another poll could say it's 3%. Another poll could say it's 20%. But it was 11% of this poll. And if you take 11% and apply it to the entire portion of the population, that's 29.7 million.
Well, 29.7 million far outnumbers the numbers of homosexuals in America, for example, or a lot of other minority groups that have outsized power in our political process.
Every
today.
Fortune 500 company is in the tank for the homosexual agenda.
I doubt there are 29 million transsexuals.
All of the media. We don't have one major media entity.
Because the people that are really in charge of it are Jewish power and influence, and they're going to make sure that anybody that is vaguely leftist is going to be given a hearing and is going to be untouchable. Nobody can lay a glove on those people without falling prey to the dangers of Jewish power and influence. They're going to be wiped out if they come out. And,
well,
see, on the other hand, for example, what happened with the black community when they had the move for homosexual marriage? Black preachers, black NAACP members and whatnot were denouncing it. Jewish power and influence got in touch with them and said, you're either going to get on board with the gay marriage initiative or we are going to kick you out of and cut off your water, cut off the money that we send to you. So they silenced them, but that doesn't mean that they've changed their attitudes or their outlook very much. I think there's we'll see. It'll be very interesting to see how the South Carolina primary plays out next week.
Well, we got Nevada voting right now. It looks like Bernie has a lead. They are voting right now. Today is also another very special anniversary. It is the 288th birthday of George Washington, born this day in the year 1732. Happy birthday to the father of our country, George Washington. We'll be right back.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Nevada Democrats are hoping to avoid a repeat of the problems that happened at the Iowa caucuses as voters gather across the state to choose who they want for president. Pete Buttigieg has been meeting some of the people he hopes will support him.
Your debate is awesome and very elegant and very respectful.
Well, we try to be.
And you are. So, and I can tell that it's not written off a script like some other people we know.
So far, there have only been a few glitches in a few of the caucus sites in Nevada. Some of the places didn't have enough volunteers. The caucuses at the Bellagio Hotel in Las Vegas went quickly with no problems. As expected, Bernie Sanders was in the lead with the most supporters, 76 to Joe Biden's 45. A Sanders supporter there was asked how it went.
Very well. Very, very well. I have hope for the future now.
This is USA Radio News.
How did you sleep last night? I can guarantee you I slept better than you did unless you've got a MyPillow. You know, I get the best sleep of my life. I work better, I sleep better, I interact with people better, and I have been healthy. The healthiest I've been in years. And it's all because I get a good night's sleep with my MyPillow. Now, it's not the cheapest thing you're ever going to find, but guess what? Good health is worth everything. Try a MyPillow. If you don't like it, you can send it back in 60 days. And you've got a 10-year warranty. It's made in the USA. And Mike Lindell guarantees you're going to love your MyPillow. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special, use my promo code USA, or call 1-800-951-8175. Get a great deal on a MyPillow by using my promo code, and I guarantee you, you'll get a good night's sleep, or you get your money back.
Go ahead. Make my day.
That's Hollywood legend Clint Eastwood making Mike Bloomberg's day, endorsing the former New York City mayor in a new interview with the Wall Street Journal. Eastwood, who said he voted for President Trump in 2016 and gave that famous empty chair speech at the Republican National Convention, said he had hoped the president would have acted in a more genteel way without tweeting and calling people names. He said the best thing we could do is vote for Bloomberg now. Bloomberg is not competing in the Nevada caucuses. The president tweeted a video which shows his record on the economy. Earlier, he called the Democrats names, and he went after Bloomberg at a Las Vegas rally on Friday.
Mini Mike so far has spent almost $500 million in order to get embarrassed by Pocahontas.
That's his insulting moniker for Elizabeth Warren, who was considered the winner of Wednesday night's Democratic debate. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right. All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. Keith, we have to make haste here. We're halfway through the hour, and we have two-thirds as much content still to get through. We saw in the news recently, as a result of the Rush Limbaugh hullabaloo, that Donald Trump proudly stated that he would vote for a homosexual for president. No problem at all. In the meanwhile, what did Vladimir Putin say?
Vladimir Putin said that we're not going to have parent number one and parent number two over here. We're going to celebrate heterosexual couples, and we want them to have children, and we're not going to deviate from that message in order to satisfy the politically correct among us.
So what you have here with the Republican Party, once again, they are, as usual, these corporate conservatives and Republicans exist only to ratify the radical initiatives of the left. While in Russia, Putin says it will not happen as long as I'm in the Kremlin. As long as I'm in the Kremlin. I'm getting a little feedback in my head. We'll see what happens. Sam can let me know if I'm not coming out all right.
Pick up that wire. I tell you.
Yeah,
what,
you know what?
We're
you
back
do.
In the Stone Ages.
Well, yeah. This gets to my article though that we posted at thepoliticalcesspool.org this week about pesky principles. This is something that really hamstrings conservatives more than anyone else, especially white conservatives. When you get down to it, principles play no role in American political behavior. People condemn or endorse the acts of their leaders according to which side they're on. There's not the slightest legitimate of pretense or obedience to rules and principles in power politics, which is what we were talking about in the last
particularly
segment.
In the left. The left is characterized by Vilfredo Pareto's famous comment that when I'm weak, I ask you for equality and justice because those are your principles. When I am strong, I deny equality and justice to you because that is my principle. Their principle is, for example, is it good for the Jews, or is it good for the left, or is it good for the revolution? They use principles to try to hamstring conservatives and keep us from applying the knockout punch to them. And unfortunately, we have way, way too many conservatives that are willing to play that game, the type of people that say Democrats are the real racists and stuff like this. They need to see mainstream conservatism. The only thing they are set up to conserve, it's a branch of neoconservatism, is the advances over the past 70 years of the left. You can't criticize any part of the civil rights movement, for example, or feminism, or the no-fault divorce initiative, or the sexual revolution, or the drug culture. And if you do, then you are to be cast into the outer darkness. But principles are not, if the other side isn't playing by those rules, we've got to play by the rules that they're playing by. We can't bring a knife to a gunfight continually.
Well, that's it. That was exactly my point, Keith. Thank you for setting the table so well. I have long awaited the day when white Christians will borrow a page from the so-called minorities whose position on any issue is determined by the answer to a simple question. Is it good for our people? And the Jews ask that question. The blacks ask that question. Hispanics ask that question. Homosexuals ask that question. The only people who are bound by principle are whites. And we should take positions on whether the result is good for us and not on following abstractions. The Romans said the health of the people is the highest law. Being overtly, overly bound to a principle is not a good thing. And I'll give you one example of this. This is just one of any number I could draw upon. And we put this on the website this week, but when the white people in Greece revolted against Islamic rule in the 1820s, the white monarchs in Europe were so goofy that they withheld support from their own side in that fight on the principle that legitimate monarchs should always be supported. And in their reasoning, the Sultan was the legitimate monarch, and therefore all the kings of Europe should take his side against their own people. Well, now, this principle was adopted over the course of the years of upheaval and warfare unleashed by the regicides in France. And in large measure, it is right. It is a good principle. But you have to base your decision on in every instance by going back and asking yourself the only question that truly matters: is it good for our people?
Well, everybody is tribal except for whites, and this is the one thing that I think is the touchstone for all people who are white who want to survive and want their their descendants to survive. They have to be people that embrace identity politics. We cannot continue to bring a knife to the gunfight, which is what we're doing when we eschew using identity politics. It's actually a form of white supremacy. White people are supposedly so good and so strong and so smart that we don't have to resort to identity politics. Well, guess what? No one's following our good example. In fact, they're using our self-imposed restraints upon ourselves to defeat us. So we've got to basically get out there and say, to heck with all this. If you say that, you're not fit to be a leader of white people, politically, intellectually, or any other way.
Well, everyone's going to have to make their own decision in November, which is the way forward. And I got a message from a friend of mine just a moment ago that said, and she said, I'm done voting for the lesser of two evils, done. And, you know, people are going to have to decide. I mean, it's not like 2016 where almost all of our audience were on board with Trump. You're going to have to decide whether you're going to vote for Trump, you're going to sit out, you're going to vote third party. I think it's going to be a split decision this time, certainly. Everyone will have to make their own decision when it comes to that. And when you see things like, you know, Trump playing this game with, you know, it's he throws out the rhetorical red meat, but not a lot of action in the end.
Like Elvis said, too much conversation,
not enough
action.
I knew you were going to say that. That's right, though. So everybody's going to have to make their own decision. But, you know, speaking of the presidential election, though, now they're saying Russia is meddling in the Bernie campaign. And we have this graphic that we're looking at here in the studio. It's a Washington Post graphic compared next to standing side by side with a Russia Today graphic. And the Washington Post headline reads, Bernie Sanders briefed by U.S. officials that Russia is trying to help his presidential campaign. And, of course, that's very bad, that Russia would have any involvement, that Russia would have any involvement and any influence whatsoever over the presidential campaign. But on the other side, on the Russia Today headline, it reads, with Sanders surging in the polls, Israel lobby spends big bucks to sink his chances. So Israel can have influence over American elections, and Russia's bad, but Israel can do it, and it's good.
And you know why that is, because Russia, back in the 60s and before, when the left was in love with Russia, they were in love with Russia because Soviet Bolsheviks were the people in charge of the Russian government, and particularly the punitive parts of that government, like the Chechen and the NKVD and things like that. Now, under Putin, they have been purged, basically, from positions of power and authority. So now Russia is the old reincarnation of Tsarist Russia, and the left, the Jewish left in particular, can't hate them enough. Now, this is what's, Russia apparently is the great Satan in the eyes of the left, but the real interference in our elections comes from two sources, two foreign nations. One, first and foremost, head and shoulders above all the rest, is the state of Israel. Secondly, is Mexico. And thirdly, is probably China. But, you know, somehow we're supposed to ignore the 800-pound gorilla on the sofa in the living room and worry about the little dormouse that's running around called Russia. Russia has nothing as far as controlling American foreign policy, for example, with the Jews. The Jews can get us, they contribute millions of dollars to every candidate that runs for national office. That means congressman, senator, president. In return, they get trillion-dollar wars fought on behalf of Israel and billions of dollars in influence and government contracts and bureaucratic sensitive jobs that neocons like John Bolton and Norman Podhoretz and Paul Wolfowitz, people like this, get, and they control our government. you know, talking about Russia is if they're a threat, you know, that's like the mouse that roared. Russia is a mouse. The elephant in the room or the gorilla in the room is Israel.
Well, you know, it's interesting, of course, when Russia was controlled by the Bolsheviks,
Bolshevik Jews,
right?
Financed by Jews on Wall Street,
and
America,
killing tens of millions of white Christians. They were good guys. They were our allies.
Yeah, you're right. See, look at that movie, The Russians Are Coming. The Russians Are Coming, starring Carl Reiner and Alan Arkin.
Now that they're Christians 60s. And nationalists, though, they're bad.
Yeah, and before being Russia-phobic was the sign of a knucklehead hick. Now, if you like Russia or if you like Putin, that's the new sign of being a knuckleheaded hick. But what's happening in Israel? Israel is getting tons of money for the influence that they buy. What's the first thing that a newly elected congressman or senator or president has to do? He has to make a trip to the Wailing Wall, wear a yarmulke, and kiss the wall.
And you know what they're doing in Russia? They're worshiping Jesus Christ. And, you know, their Christian leaders in Russia will go by, I saw this, and bless with holy water their machine guns and their tanks. That's the kind of nation that I wish I lived in.
Well, look, Russia has gone back to the true Christianity, and we have a gospel.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Kosher. Certified. Put the two words together to get co-certified, which is spelled with an S-E-H instead of just S-H. It's the right way to spell this, the German way, and it made it easier to trademark. Now, did I tell you that the letters S-C-H still make the shh sound, as in all those American food producers saying shh? Let's keep it really quiet that our product is kosher certified. Think about it. Nearly one century of kosher certification, and hardly anyone outside exclusive observers knows that most packaged food and kitchen products are literally certified by religious intermediaries. Well, because you, consumer, are indirectly paying for this. The Kosher Certified app is here to make kosher certification awareness an inclusive matter for people of all faiths and identities. And it even boasts a unique database of products not kosher certified. We call that NKC. Start memeing it. It's fun. NKC. Not kosher certified. Now, to confuse our audience even more, we put a question mark at the end of our name, and that really cinched our trademark approval. It relates to the website where you can begin your new shopping behavior, thekosherquestion.com.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, I know we tried to shoehorn it in before a commercial break a couple of segments ago, but I want to remind you again that today is the 288th birthday of George Washington,
born the father of our country,
February 22nd, 1732. You know, I ask you a lot of times, Keith, when we play a doo-wop song, was America better then or now? Was America better in 1732, even though it wasn't even America yet?
Well, like today, the forces of civilization are fighting savages.
Well, ain't that the truth? It makes me also think of this story. There is actually a rock at Plymouth. Plymouth Rock isn't just a thing we say. It's an actual rock. And engraved in that rock is the year 1620, which is when they landed. Well, just like the grave of Nathan Bedford Forrest, it was spray-painted with red graffiti a few days ago as they are celebrating now the 400th year of the landing at Plymouth, Massachusetts. And if you thought they were going to limit their tyranny to the Confederate heroes, you were, of course, very, very much wrong. But so that happened, the 1620 rock. You know, and that's a big initiative in the media now. That's when the first slaves arrived. That's
no, the 1619 movement, it's called, or project, excuse me.
Right, 1619, but the rock says 1620.
Well, 1619 is the date of the inception of the Jamestown colony. So they beat the Yankees by 1 year, I supposedly, but
it is funny because, you know, this gets me back into the, you know, the media wrote incessantly a few years ago that I'm in favor of slavery because I agreed with a Jamaican writer, a black writer for the Jamaican Observer that there were some great benefits to the descendants of the slaves, the black descendants of the slaves that currently live here, and I agreed with that,
None so benefited as blacks that live in North America, in Canada or the United States, but you would think that they were the most oppressed minority, the most downtrodden and exploited people in the world.
Well, I don't even want to talk about all that. I just wanted to bring up the fact that on George Washington's birthday, we have to cover a story about the actual Plymouth Rock being vandalized with this white-hating graffiti.
Well, look, all of these monument takedowns, first Confederates, Sam Francis said this, that they'd come for the Confederates and they'd be coming for the Founding Fathers. And they've even gotten around to people like Lewis and Clark, Columbus, and Jefferson and George Washington. And believe me, no white people are going to be left. In a place like Memphis, it has a majority minority population.
Well, I mean, there's a John Wayne. John Wayne, you know, everybody, anyone,
yeah, well,
and everyone,
see,
if you're white.
If you're white, you're going to go up to the guillotine and get your head chopped off, because this is the way that in a majority minority urban setting, the blacks or the browns signal to the white population, guess what, guys, you aren't in charge anymore. There's a new sheriff in town. He's us, and we're no longer going to honor your cultural heroes or your culture.
Well, you got to have identity politics. I mean, that goes back to...
And that's why you've got to have identity politics.
It goes back to, the power politics. It goes back to principles. The question is it good for our people? Identity politics, that's the way...
And furthermore, we are very strong, because if you look at a map of the United States with a county-by-county analysis as to whether they're red, conservative, or blue, liberal, red is 90% to 95% of the nation. Blue is a very small part, but it's the urban areas. So consequently, what we need to do is find some way to consolidate our strength in the rural areas.
We got, Keith, we're trying to go quickly here. We could spend a whole other segment with you offering your thoughts on that, and it'd be time well spent. We got a beautiful handwritten, perfect cursive, two-page letter here from one of our generous supporters.
Someone that learned how to write back in the old days.
From Arkansas. But before I read that, you've got 1 minute, 60 seconds. It's got to be 60 seconds or we won't get to it. The Boy Scouts.
What happened with the Boy Scouts? Well, they were harassed from 1980 onward to let homosexuals become scoutmasters. They knew it wasn't a good idea. They knew that sending these people out into sparsely populated wooded areas with vulnerable prepubescent and pubescent boys was not going to be a good thing. And lo and behold, all those voices of stodginess and conventionality were right. Now the Boy Scouts have had to take bankruptcy, Chapter 11 bankruptcy, because of the multitude of lawsuits they're getting from former Boy Scouts who were sexually abused and sexually assaulted by this new, new modern type of Scoutmaster that they were forced to have. And of course, the left treats the link like it didn't happen. There's nothing that there's no connection between having gay Scoutmasters and having Boy Scouts who have been sexually abused by their Scoutmasters. Well, who else does it? You'd have to be a homosexual because the Scoutmasters have to be men and the Boy Scouts have to be men. If two groups of men or two groups of males have sex together, that's the definition of homosexuality, right?
Well, it's like someone said, you get woke and you go broke. So now the Boy Scouts have filed bankruptcy, although I believe they have like $10 billion worth of, I can't remember how much it is, but it was an astronomical amount of money.
Well, jump on in, folks. The water is fine. Let's divvy all that up, right?
Well, it ain't going to go to us, I can tell you. It never does. Anyway, one thing of note, and this goes to this beautiful piece of correspondence we received from our good friend in Arkansas, in Jonesboro, James Fields has filed an appeal for his murder conviction in Charlottesville, and it got our listener thinking, and here's what he wrote. Dear James, here's the account of the slaughter of a 65-year-old woman in Memphis, Tennessee, some years back that clearly reveals America's two-tier justice system, and he put justice in quotations. You know the details of the Charlottesville event, where the judge gave the young white boy two life sentences plus 463 years in connection with the death of a female Antifa associate. This woman had stopped at a Sonic drive-in restaurant in Memphis at 11:30 one morning and was immediately carjacked by two black boys. They drove her to a rural area in an adjacent county into a field, took her purse, and then threw her out of the car and proceeded to drive over her repeatedly until she died. They then were caught because they went back into town and went on a spending spree with her money and credit cards, which ultimately led to their capture. These two murderers are presently sitting in jail with no extreme sentences hanging over their heads, such as was handed down in the Charlottesville case, when there were indeed certain contingencies that bring the court decision into question.
All vehicular homicides are not alike, apparently.
With America's present two-tier justice system, it is likely that the black killers of the Memphis woman could be paroled in the future, but no such luck for the white boy in the Charlottesville case.
All they need to do is get Kim Kardashian on their side.
Well,
Trump.
Here's the point that he makes, and it's a good point. It is very questionable as to whether or not James Fields ran over her with the intention, whether or not she died at all from the impact, whether or not she even suffered an impact.
Well,
we know no doubt that these two black men did throw a white woman out of the car, did run over her repeatedly until she died.
With malice and forethought.
With malice and forethought, and that is two very different sentences for two very different incidents.
Well, the left would agree with you. You got to have differential justice. Black people and other minorities need to be let off and need to be let out of jail because there are too many of them in jail. Meanwhile, a white person...
And Donald Trump would agree with you, by the way, and that's why he let all those people out of jail.
Well, that's because he's getting his advice from two quintessential Manhattan liberals, Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, and his daughter Ivanka. And he lets people like Kim Kardashian, who are...
And what is that all about?
Yeah, she's a poster child for everything that is wrong morally with America today. And she comes in like the great moral sage, like Mahatma Gandhi or something like this, to him, and she suggests that a couple of black women who are serving long-term sentences for their involvement in, one was a murderer, one was a drug kingpin, they should be let go, so he lets them out. I don't think he did the one in Tennessee that was a young prostitute that killed a white guy who was just lying in bed next to her, not trying to assault her, not trying to do anything. That woman killed him when she was 16, and she's let out of jail. Now she's married to a rapper. Then you have what happened with this lady named Johnson, Alice Johnson, I believe it is, from Memphis, who was supposedly, it was a great miscarriage of justice because she wasn't violent. Well, she wasn't violent, but she was the kingpin of a big drug operation. But they get off. Meanwhile, don't hold your breath waiting for James Alton Fields James Fields to get out of jail for the Charlottesville death.
And it's very much a possibility that Heather Heyer died of a heart attack. I mean, we can't
well,
say for sure.
But the
question is, Keith, I mean, you said it. Not all vehicular homicides are equal. I mean, I'm not trying to be funny here, so don't make a joke of it. If you're a betting man, what odds do you put on James Fields' appeal?
I mean, there's no it's the longest long shot of all time. And see, James Fields, the key to understanding the James Fields verdict is that they put a couple of Cub lawyer public defenders on it, and they didn't even have their heart in it. But the key is, did his vehicle get off of the roadway and onto the sidewalk like the murderous Muslim guy in Nice, France did a few years ago and killed about 50 people? No, James Fields stayed on the road where his car should have been.
Well, we got a comment here, and it asks, where's the evidence? What was brought out? What did she die from? Is this a secret? I mean, this isn't JFK. How do we not know the details after this case is concluded?
But it is JFK because the establishment doesn't want you to make that investigation or ask those questions.
We're going to talk with a young man who's walking across America to raise awareness about the South Africans, the farmers who are being murdered. What a story. Stay tuned for this.